This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. After what seemed like a never-ending flow of campaign ads and political punditry, for some the party's finally over, and for others it's just getting started. Republicans won control of Congress. Mitch McConnell's almost sure to be the next Senate Majority Leader. Ohio Governor John Kasich easily sailed to re-election as the GOP won a majority of state governorships. And voters in the District of Columbia voted to legalize recreational marijuana. So now what? Here to provide some thoughtful analysis on Tuesday's results are political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Jean Beaupre, Xavier University Assistant Director of Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, and Director for Government Relations, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Andy Chow, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Later in the show, Scott Wortman, Kentucky politics and government reporter for The Inquirer, will join us, and we'll even be hearing from Neil Conan. So it's a full house today, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, everybody.
Afternoon.
Hi. Hello.
Ken, I liked your tweet about half an hour ago, and I quote here, "Had enough of the elections? Too bad." you gave me my best laugh of the day, Ken.
well, how could you have too much? I mean, even if you're a Democrat, and you're probably not a happy Democrat right now, if you're a political junkie and you love following politics, the enormity of Tuesday's rout for the Republicans was just, no other word than enormous. We knew the Republicans would pick up the Senate. We knew the Republicans would add seats to the House majority. And we knew the Republicans would pick up additional governorships. But in total, and looking at the whole thing at once, it was just overwhelming to see the seats that even a lot of people thought were very, very close turned out to be a rout. I mean, in the days before the Kentucky Senate race, for example, with Mitch McConnell, there was a Survey USA poll that had it basically tied, even though a lot of people questioned the poll. But of course, it gave the Grimes campaign some ammunition, some momentum. And ultimately, that wasn't close either. So it was, you know, if we talk about how 2006 and 2008 were such great years for the Democrats, and they were, 2014 was an outstanding year for the Republicans.
And Ken, I understand you're going to let Howard field the trivia question today. Is that right?
I get to do that. Actually, Howard sent me a note and says he doesn't get enough airtime.
I can't get a word in edgewise.
With all of us in the same room.
I'm going to take advantage of the opportunity.
So throw that out there, okay. Howard. What's the trivia question?
Well, our Speaker of the House, our homeboy, John Boehner, obviously was thumping his chest the other night with good reason, because he picked up a lot of House seats. And he's going to have the largest majority in this new Congress since 1928. And the trivia question is, who was the Speaker of the House in that House that was elected in 1928?
Okay, that's the trivia question. If you think you know the answer, or if it's merely just thinking, that's okay. Give us a call and take a shot at this, 513-419-7100. And Ken, is it okay if, even though this is a homebrewed question, can we still give away the famous button as a prize?
Oh, absolutely not.
Of course. All right, I'll give them a button.
No.
My collection.
I have a Jerry Springer button I can spring.
Right. Yeah.
You had to buy that button with a check.
Thanks, Ken.
So I've heard some different words that have been thrown around. You were starting to go into this at the beginning there, Ken. This was a GOP wave. It was a tsunami. So what do you think, Ken? Wave, tsunami, none of the above? You know, how does this really compare to past midterms?
Well, it's still different than 2010, because 2010, a lot of Republicans, that was the Tea Party victory and the big 63-seat gain in the House for the Republicans. It's different than 2010 in the sense that many Republicans won that year only because they had the letter R next to their name. I mean, a lot of it was just running on the Republican line. But here, there seemed to be really real deep dissatisfaction in the country. And you could say, well, it's Obama's fault. And even Democrats will acknowledge that the president did not help their cause at all in many of the states. And of course, in many of the states, they lost in the Senate. But look at states like Maryland. Look at states like Illinois. Look at states like Massachusetts, states that are still pretty much favorable to the president, where the president's numbers are pretty good. These are true blue states, and yet all three elected Republican governors. I mean, Maryland, the only time that they elect Republican governors is when a guy named Spiro Agnew runs 50 years ago, and one other guy in 2002. I mean, there's a state law in Maryland that says you're not allowed to elect a Republican governor, and yet that changed on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Ken, let me offer a friendly amendment to that, which is to say, I think a lot of the down-ticket races where more people voted, and in that case, it probably was because there was an R in front of the candidate's name.
Well, look, Liz, obviously when there's a wave, there's a wave, although it was interesting. I was in New Hampshire on election night working with New Hampshire Public Radio, and that state always seems to go along with the wave. When the Republicans did well in 2004, it was a great year in New Hampshire. When the Democrats did well in 2006 and 2008, a great year for the Democrats. But New Hampshire seemed to buck the tide with Gene Shaheen winning, with Democratic governor winning. But you're absolutely right. I mean, look at down the ballot in Ohio, for example. We were thinking, well, you know, Fitzgerald was gone as the gubernatorial candidate, but maybe there was hope for the Democrats down the line. But even the Josh Mandel race, which a lot of Democrats were looking for as some kind of hopeful sign, that even wasn't close. So you're probably right. Being a Republican on Tuesday was not a bad thing to be.
Yeah, Ohio is kind of a good example, and Andy, you can speak to this too. That the gubernatorial candidate at the top of the ticket for the Democrats turned out to be such an absolute dud that it just trickled down into the rest of these races. They had no chance whatsoever. Some of them were good candidates. Some of them were, okay. They had possibly had a shot, but they were dragged down, and the Democratic turnout was abysmal.
Right.
In this state.
Well, and for.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead,
so,
Danny.
And for a lot of people who have been following the Democratic Party over the past couple of years, the names on the down ticket races, the Connie Pillich, John Carney, Nina Turner, those are really big names for the Democrats. And really, a lot of people thought that they would have had a shot at winning those races. But it really does seem like the what's a lot of people have been calling baggage at the top of the ticket really, really hurt those down ticket races.
The other thing that I think happened, and we saw this in some local races, is the Republican Party was so flush, there was big money, relatively speaking, in down-ticket races. I know candidate campaigns that got well over $250,000, and they had good money to begin with.
Yeah, there was a state Senate race, here where they spent that kind of money, and they lost.
Yeah.
Andy, party chair Chris Redfern blamed the media for Ed Fitzgerald's woes?
Well, for the past couple of weeks now, the writing was kind of on the wall of who was going to win, that John Kasich was going to win by a big margin. And so Democratic Party Chairman Chris Redfern has frequently been throwing the media under the bus and saying that it was the media's fault, saying that there were certain outlets that were on the Republican side, and so that's been kind of some of the rhetoric that we've been hearing for the past couple of weeks, even a month or two now.
513.
Is anybody smartly listening to this, that the media is in the pockets of the Republicans? I mean,
that's true.
This is just remarkable to hear.
you can say that in Ohio and sometimes get away with it, I guess.
Yeah. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And if you think you know the answer to the trivia question that Howard threw out earlier, which, Howard, why don't you give that again?
Oh, yes. The last time there was a House Republican majority as large as the one that was elected Tuesday night was in 1928. And when that Congress convened, they elected a speaker. Who was that speaker in that new Congress?
513-419-7100 if you think you know the answer to that. Meantime, let's take a call from Carol in Fort Thomas. Good afternoon, Carol. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello.
And what's your question?
Well, I was watching a C-SPAN panel last night of former members of both the Senate and the House. And one of the gentlemen, I believe it was Bob Bennett, who's from one of the western states,
Utah.
That escapes me right now. But he made a comment
that
he had knowledge that Mitch McConnell, anticipating his role as the majority leader in the Senate, had more or less isolated Ted Cruz so that Cruz would not be able to gum up the works as he might have done in the past. And I just wondered if any of your panelists might have a comment on that.
Okay, Carol, thank you very much for the question. We appreciate it. Ken, you were saying Utah was the state.
Right, that's where Bob Bennett is from. And I know Bob very well.
Bob Bennett's from, right. Uh-huh.
And Bob Bennett lost his seat. Bob Bennett was one of the most conservative senators in the Senate, but not conservative enough for many Tea Party folks. So he lost his seat to Mike Cruz at the state convention. But I think Carol is exactly right. Mitch McConnell's battles will, of course, be with the Obama White House and the Democratic minority. But at the same time, he's still battling with the Ted Cruzes, the Mike Lees, and to some extent the Rand Pauls, the Tea Party conservatives who really want to sock it to the establishment. Now, Mitch McConnell has talked about working in some kind of tandem with the president on some issues, either energy policy or immigration or things like that. But there are the Ted Cruzes of the world who say that, no, look, we stand for principles. We are conservatives. We're not going to be sellouts. We're not going to be rhinos. And I think a lot of McConnell's problems, you know, even though he has this expanded majority, and Mitch McConnell spent his whole life hoping to be the Senate Majority Leader, but Mitch McConnell will have as many problems with Ted Cruz as he will with Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin and those guys.
Yep.
I think a supermajority can be a harder body to govern when you're in his position. It's true at almost any level. Once you don't have to be the key vote, you can go wander off to a lot of different places.
Well, it's been the case for Boehner in the House for the last few years.
Well, remember what happened when the Democrats reached 60 votes in 2009. Al Franken won the recount in Minnesota. Arlen Specter switched to the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania. Obama had 60 votes. I said, great, now we could do whatever we want. But then you had Mary Landrieu, and you had Joe Lieberman, and you had the Ben Nelson in Nebraska, all wanting their own piece of the pie with the health care. And all the things that the Democrats hoped they would do with 60 votes never got accomplished because all these Democrats had these Democrat renegades had all their own agenda involved. And then, of course, the 60 votes disappeared when Scott Brown won Ted Kennedy's Senate seat.
We'll continue our discussion with our panel of political experts after this break. Neil Conan's going to join us to talk about his upcoming visit to Cincinnati with Ken Rudin. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. And we'll also see if we can get some answers to this trivia question that Howard threw out earlier. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Jean Beaupre from Xavier University, Ohio Public Radio's Andy Chow, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Later in the show, Scott Wortman, Kentucky politics and government reporter for The Inquirer, will join us. And you can join the conversation, excuse me, at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Neil Conan's going to be joining us in just a few minutes here, but I think we have a couple of people in line to try their hand at the trivia question. So let's ask Nathan downtown if he knows the answer. Nathan?
Nicholas Long.
You got it.
You got it. First one.
Way to go, Nathan.
Very good job,
right,
Nathan.
That's it. That is the answer. Yep. Nicholas Longworth of Cincinnati, of course.
Must have been too easy. I didn't think it was, but it must have been too easy.
Oh, it was pretty easy.
He said it with such assuredness, I thought he was there.
Thanks, Nathan. Stay on the line. Our producer will get your information on where he can send that.
I have a comment also I wanted to mention.
Sure.
In Ohio, we had a Green Party candidate on the ballot, as we did in New York as well. And might be worth noting how in New York, Hallie Hawkins pulled 5% and Anita Reyes pulled 4% in Ohio.
Yeah, and well, and the Green Party in Ohio has now managed to keep its ballot status, too.
Yes, she drew over 100,000 votes.
Right.
Well, Nathan, thank you very much. Congratulations to you. And stay again, we'll keep you on the line here so that you can talk with Pete Reitmeier. And thank you much.
Mark, could I add something to that trivia answer?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in 1928, I mean, Howard's exactly right. The Republican Party picked up 30 seats in the House in 1928. There was the biggest margin the Republican Party ever had in the House. 2 years later, the Republicans lost their majority. They lost 53 seats. And 2 years after that, they lost 101 seats. Wow. So even though 1928 is the high watermark for the Republicans in the House, they would lose their majority 2 years later. So, I mean, I don't want to sound like a Democratic cheerleader, and I am not, but it's important to note that just because 2014 is a great Republican year, that has no bearing on what could happen 2 years down the road.
Right. Yeah, politics is all cyclical. I mean, yeah,
absolutely.
It's always changing, isn't it? The pendulum is always swinging.
Except my jokes. Everything changes except the same jokes I do in the show.
Well, let's bring on somebody who knows about your jokes. And Neil Conan, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Neil, good to hear from you.
Howard, thanks very much for having me on. I have to say, Ken's jokes are just as predictable as a pre-election poll in Virginia.
Neil, I really miss hearing you on the air. What are you up to these days?
Well, I'm here in Hawaii and doing, among other things, running a macadamia nut farm.
Should I take you seriously?
Wait, can I ask you a question?
We like macadamia nuts.
Wait. So, Neil, let me see if I understand that. You left me and NPR to run a nut farm. something.
Exactly.
Ken. That's about the size of it.
I can report the Republican wave did not reach the deep blue waters of Hawaii.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, speaking of nuttiness, I really have to question your sanity. Why did you decide to get back together with Ken and do this roadshow?
Wait a minute.
I have to have fun. Macadamia nuts are wonderful. They're tasty. They're delicious. They're nutritious. But they don't. They don't have a sense of humor when we're talking about Arizona.
How's the roadshow been going?
It's been going great. We had a wonderful time up in Rochester, New York. We've done this all around the country, and it's going to be really interesting to do it now after this recent series of elections, where everything has changed, but as you point out, everything will change again.
We did one a few months ago in Fairbanks, Alaska, Neil and I, and they didn't even carry the political junkie on the show up there, and yet it was a standing room only crowd. Yeah. It was fantastic. The reception has been fantastic. I expect over 20 people showing up in Cincinnati.
I think, yes, easily, yes.
Hey, Neil, talk about that. Ken at first denied it, but then he admitted that the two of you are going to be in Cincinnati later this month with your road show. Give us some details on that.
It's November 21st, and it's, honestly, I forget exactly where we're going to be, but I think it's 7:30. Ken, do you know the name of the hall?
It's the Masonic Hall.
Right, the Masonic Hall, right.
The Masonic Hall.
Yeah.
And we're going to be there with, Ken's trivia questions, and we're going to have Ken's famous scuttle button puzzles. We're going to have guests to analyze these past elections, and, looking forward to 2016.
And Neil, you have a role to play in that too, right? It's not just Ken.
Absolutely.
Not just Ken.
I'll be there.
Yeah. Well, that's good, yeah. Because I'm supposed to be a part of this too, so I gotta.
Everybody will be there. We're all one big happy family.
Right.
Absolutely. Ken, I did want to ask you, is there one result this past Tuesday night that surprised you? I'd have to say, for me, it would have been Maryland governor.
Maryland governor is unbelievable. I mean, the fact that Anthony Brown, you knew something was up when Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all the heavyweights came in for Anthony Brown, the lieutenant governor of Maryland. But I was thinking, why would the Democrats have to come in a state that is so solidly blue that the polls show the Democrats will carry so easily? And obviously, they knew something was up. There was obviously a dissatisfaction with Martin O'Malley, the outgoing governor, and his tax policies. And it really, I guess it reflected down to his lieutenant governor. But any talk about Martin O'Malley challenging Hillary Clinton in 2016, or anybody running for president, Martin O'Malley in 2016, you may have to think twice, considering that a lot of people took Tuesday's results as a repudiation on his 8 years in office.
Mm-hmm. And, it was.
Absolutely. He's going to have to go back to being an Irish musician, and if you've ever heard his band, he may need a day job.
You were saying Maryland was the shock to you, Neil. I think equally, Illinois and Massachusetts as well elected Republican governors. So you had several states that have been solidly blue in the past suddenly electing GOP governors. So I was quite startled by that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you're talking about people whose political careers appear to be over, Martha Coakley has now lost two races statewide in Massachusetts, which is, Ken, is that unprecedented for a Democratic candidate in this century? Hmm.
Well, you know something, the funny thing is because the Democrats have such control over the state legislature in Massachusetts, the state does now and then elect Republican governors. We had Mitt Romney, we had William Weld, we had Paul Cellucci. So that does happen. But I think the fact is that, you know, she was favored to win this race. She was favored to beat Scott Brown in the Senate race in 2010. And neither one happened. And it's just, it's not good news for her. But I think, look, Illinois, you had an unpopular Governor Pat Quinn, who raised taxes and the pension problem. The pension system in Illinois is bad. Martha Coakley was not a great candidate in Illinois, in Massachusetts. But then when you look at Maryland, just made no sense. Look at all the races where even the Republicans were incumbents. Look at Scott Walker in Wisconsin. That was supposed to be a nail biter. Look at Rick Scott in Florida. We thought he was going to lose. And yet even those governors with a lot of controversy behind them wound up winning it as well. That just showed, you know, I think Gene mentioned it earlier, that showed that having an R next to your name is not the worst thing in the world in 2014.
Right. Hey,
and
Neil.
Is Scott Brown in New Hampshire just an anomaly, or is Scott Brown's career over too?
It's probably over. I mean, yeah. Although I'm suspecting he may run for president, and because remember when he ran for the Senate, he ran against Martha Coakley. When he lost for re-election, it was Elizabeth Warren. This year, he lost to Jean Shaheen. He needs to run against women if at all possible. So if Hillary Clinton is the nominee in 2016, he should run for president.
Yeah,
I want to ask you guys. Women. Yeah. I want to ask you guys if you because you're counting some of these guys out and some of men and women, some of them in. Does it take more than it used to try and get that far along? In other words, the size of everything that they're doing, the numbers, the money, all that, do you have less chance when you're wounded this time, at this time? Does that make sense?
Not to me.
Well,
no, I'm sorry. Stop the question again. I'm not sure. You're saying that because you've been defeated, is it tougher to rebound and run for president?
Aren't there candidates who've been or office holders that have been defeated and come back, and you're writing a lot of these guys off? I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just wondering if it's harder to gather the resources so that those people who are wounded are less likely to be able to do that.
Kind of depends on who you're talking. This is a really individual thing. If you have a solid ideological base and supporters with deep pockets, I think they're going to stick with people and give them a second chance. If you're a more broadly based candidate, it may be more difficult to come around the second time.
Yeah.
And Ken, if I remember right, Ronald Reagan was pretty much written off early on in his attempts to win the White House.
Well, he barely lost to Gerald Ford in 1976. I mean, he was challenging an incumbent, although an appointed incumbent. But then again, once Ford lost in 76, Reagan was the front runner. I mean, we did see Richard Nixon, of course, losing for governor in 62 in California and then coming back and winning the White House. But look at somebody like Rick Perry. Rick Perry he was kind of embarrassed in his bid for the presidency in 2008. He's trying, and he's also under indictment right now, which doesn't help, and he's not even the governor of Illinois, which is strange because usually that's what you have to be. But I mean, the fact is, Rick Perry is not exactly right. Well, Rick Perry is not raising a lot of money, and one part of the reason is that a lot of Texas money is looking at Ted Cruz, maybe others in the party. But also, the fact is that his day may have come and gone. I mean, look, we're not writing him off. He's still a charming kind of character, and he has a reservoir of support, but he seems to be yesterday's news, like Rick Santorum, yesterday's news. Now it's time for the new guys and the new gals on the block.
Yeah. Hey, Neil.
I would suggest that Ronald Reagan fits the model of an ideological candidate with supporters with deep pockets.
Yeah.
Yes.
Neil, it was really good to hear from you today. And while we're not looking forward to seeing Ken, we are looking forward to seeing you when you come to Cincinnati later this month. So, Neil,
I can't wait to get there.
Thank you very much, Neil. And you can get more information about the road show and also find ticket information at wvxu.org. And Andy Chow, let's bring you back in. What does the Ohio Democratic Party have to do now? I mean, they're already doing some major things to regroup, correct?
Yeah, they have to start from the very beginning again. And everybody, all the big leaders are definitely admitting that this is going to be a big rebuilding process. And it all starts in December when Redfern officially steps down as chair, and they're going to have to elect a new chairperson. And then they need to go from there. And U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, he's basically the biggest leader for the party right now, and he's says that he's just kind of trying to help the party through this situation. And the big thing is that
he's backing a candidate for state chair too.
He's backing his friend Denny Wojnarowski, and and so that name's been thrown out there. There are other names kind of being tossed around behind closed doors too. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is, what's going to happen in 2 years? Who are they going to run against? Senator Rob Portman, if Portman decides to run for a Senate seat, and then who are they going to run in 4 years from now too?
Right.
Is there any silver lining at all for Ohio Democrats right now?
Well, I guess, I mean, if you look at it as a cyclical thing, they're nothing. It can't get worse than this. And so this is where they can start to rebuild again and really take stock at what they have and what they can do better. And so they're trying to, what they're saying to us is that they're trying to stay optimistic about the whole thing.
I mean, they've been in this position before. I mean, 1994, you know, when Voinovich just, you know, trounced Rob Birch for governor, and the party almost went out of legal existence mm-hmm. as a political party in Ohio. You know, they can rebuild this thing, but they have to do it very quickly. And one of the things that they don't have in order to rebuild and to motivate their base is that Obama organization, Organizing for America. You know, it wasn't a factor this time, and it's not going to be a factor in the future.
There are entities, unions and organizations that, you know, what do those people do in the meantime? And is there enough horsepower within the leadership in the Democratic Party to regroup those entities?
Andy, has Governor Kasich given any indication of what his priorities are going to be for Ohio during this next term?
Well, there are a lot of things that he's brought up over the past couple of years that are still on the table. For example, this year he tried to pass a cigarette tax increase, and that still hasn't been addressed. And then the really big thing is the severance tax. What kind of tax will Ohio impose on the natural gas that's being pulled out of its shale? And so that's going to be another thing that we can expect to see maybe addressed this year during the lame duck session. And if not this year, then he's probably definitely going to bring it up again next year.
And then we're going to have to wait and see if he addresses the notion of running for president of the United States.
Right. Well, I don't know.
We may not have to wait if we're looking at the issues that he chooses to push. We may be able to see it in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw on election night, but during the celebration, the Republicans were all holding up the signs. It had the year 2010 with the name Strickland crossed out, then 2014 with the name Fitzgerald crossed out, and then it had the year 2016 and with the name Hillary just waiting to be crossed out. So certainly somewhat of an indication that maybe he is thinking about running for president with serious thoughts.
Well, Andy, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Ohio Public Radio State House reporter Andy Chown. After the break, more from our panel of political experts. Scott Wortman, who covers Kentucky politics, will join us. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Hang on there. We'll get to your calls right after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Jean Beaupre from Xavier University, WVXU's Howard Wilkinson, and Scott Wortman, Kentucky politics and government reporter for The Inquirer. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Elaine, I believe, or Ellen. I'm not sure which. She may have misspelled it. That in Pleasant Ridge, and hopefully you're still with us. Is it Elaine?
Elon.
Okay, my apologies. I couldn't quite tell what he had written on the screen there. So, Elon, what's your question?
Well, I just wondered with all this, speaking of Neil and the Nut House, I'm just wondering, we've got that Nut House in Washington, D.C., and I just wondered if it's time to remodel and break down the aisle and just go to a one-party system, because you know, so much of this is about raising money, which isn't that what we're concerned about? Not having enough for the middle class in their income? at least that's what we're running on. And, you know, there's just a bunch of just he said, she said, you know? It's like when we grow up and we enter the real world, we stop all that, you know? And we actually get down to what we really want to do in life.
Well, you know,
and
it's interesting, too.
I wonder if it's not time to just go to the one house system where we have national debates with what we really think the national issues are, and then we have an elective kind of class where we go and work, you know, maybe 1 year of our four-year term to work on local issues. I mean, you know, let's just, I think there's just a lot of across the board, you know, like, we just go back and forth. I mean, we go, Democrats, we won in 2010, and now it's 2014, and the Republicans win, but
yeah.
What happened in between? Nothing.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up, because
and he couldn't get his ideas done, and, you know, all the Democrats, you know, the Republicans, they have good ideas, but they can't get their ideas done.
It's interesting you bring that up, though, because a lot of people do complain and say there really is no difference today between the two parties, and Ken and Gene, I'd be interested on your input on that.
Ken?
You ready for that, Ken? Then you can root for everyone.
Thanks for the comment.
The thing is that everybody is, you know, look, there's two ways to look at the election. Obviously, there's an opportunity for both sides to have some kind of comity. We've had the comity, of course, but not the comity. And there's an opportunity for McConnell and the Republicans and Obama and the White House and the Democrats to work together. But if you listened to both comments, especially from the president on Tuesday, I didn't think it was a gracious response from the president. I think basically it was like, this was not about me. This has nothing to do with the issues. It has nothing to do with me changing my policies. It's all about the fact that there was a bad turnout. And I'm going to still stand for my beliefs, which he should do, but I'm going to push through things through executive action, which, of course, when Obama was running for president in 2008, he criticized George W. Bush for doing the same thing, all the executive orders and things like that. But as far as what elections, what they do and how they affect people, I mean, I don't know the answer, because you think of the $4 billion that was spent in the 2014 midterm elections, $4 billion. I mean, I didn't even make half that at NPR. I mean, that's how much money that is. And yet, what's accomplished? What gets done on Capitol Hill? The lesson we thought we heard after 2012, well, we got to do something about guns. Well, we got to do something about immigration. And, you know, millions and millions of dollars later in all the campaigns, nothing gets done. And so you wonder even why they run for office, because ultimately, as soon as you run, you're running for re-election.
We got an email from Jeremy who wanted to know if anyone knew what percentage of voters voted for House Democrats and for House GOP.
As a summary number.
Yeah, we're not quite sure.
I haven't seen that number, but...
Have you seen anything? Go ahead, Ken. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I haven't seen anything, but isn't it remarkable? What is it? In the 16-member Ohio congressional delegation, is 12 Republicans and four Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
Clearly the state can't be divided that overwhelmingly on the Republican side. Now, look, we know what redistricting means and what it does, and we do know. I mean, I had Ed Rollins on my show this week, the Political Junkie show, and Rollins was saying, look, for years the Democrats ran the redistricting situation, and the Democrats had the unbelievably higher numbers. But when you have a 12-4 delegation in a state that basically is pretty much an evenly divided state,
right,
that says something about the process.
There are no competitive congressional districts in Ohio now, ever since these lines have been redrawn by the Republicans.
Not one race was close.
And they won't be until they're redrawn again somehow, or we find a new way to do this.
Well, in a sense, doesn't that speak to the previous callers? I mean, we have a one-party system in the state, and you can measure the end of some term whether that's working or not. I would argue that parties are probably easier than dividing people by their factions, by their interests. You know, Madison was right, I think, when he said we're all going to divide up into factions, and if we didn't have two parties, we'd probably have even more, I don't know what you'd call them, you know, interest groups or something.
Or factions, as Madison called them. I mean,
factions,
yeah,
that's
exactly a good word.
Right.
So basically you can't take the politics out of politics.
No, well, that's precisely.
That's what it boils down to. Yeah,
Howard, they're not talking about Madison Bumgarner. I just
leave it to you, Ken, to make that connection. Let's get Scott in on the conversation here.
Yes.
Scott, a lot of the polls showed the McConnell-Grimes race was going to be close. I mean, that was the initial thought that everybody had. This is going to be a tight one. But in the end, McConnell ended up beating her by, what was it, about 15 points?
16.
16.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess, first off, this shows you can't underestimate Mitch McConnell, and you can't underestimate the power of being the incumbent. but maybe you can't underestimate the polls.
Yes, yeah, the polls have come under attack after after the election results came in. Although I've heard different schools of thought. I've heard some people think that in the last 2 weeks, undecideds made up their mind and basically decided on McConnell because he was the majority leader and is in line to be the majority leader, and that's kind of what caused people to swing to his side at the last minute.
But usually those undecideds don't break that heavily, you know.
Even
incumbent, right.
Even McConnell's camp was surprised. They said the most their internal polling had shown was 11%. They didn't expect it to be that dramatic.
Ken, do you see...
Scott, can I ask you...
Yes.
Ken,
I'm sorry, Scott, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of controversy over Alison Grimes not declaring who she voted for. She said, yeah, look, I'm not going to tell you who I voted for, although I am a Clinton Democrat, but I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to even say the Obama word because I don't want to be seen saying the Obama word. Did she make a mistake? Did she help turn off Democratic voters by running so far away from the president?
It definitely didn't help her, and I think it was a good lesson that it's best to just cut your losses on those type of questions and give them the soundbite, because it actually, they made a lot more hay of her not saying it than if she did say it. Although I personally am skeptical that that's what actually caused people to vote for McConnell. McConnell, even before Alison Grimes got in the race, a year before she got in the race, he was already pounding into the heads of people that this is about me versus Obama, me versus Harry Reid, and he never wavered from that. And I think that's what, I mean, he always seemed confident that he was going to get enough votes based on that, and he was correct.
Gene,
but he also had very high disapproval numbers.
Mm-hmm. Disapproval numbers?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Republicans and even the Tea Party people, they weren't going to vote for Alison Grimes. So they might not like McConnell, but they weren't going to vote for Grimes.
Or the Libertarian on the ballot.
Yeah.
Do you think there were certain issues that worked well for McConnell?
Basically that he's not Obama. And, yeah. And that was the cornerstone
of his
campaign.
Was it.
I mean, it sounds flippant, but I honestly think that is what the whole election was about. It wasn't about McConnell and Grimes. It was about, do you like Obama or not? And Kentucky does not.
And that was... The point of that was it went not just from his base, but up into his swing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was the swing voters. I mean, he already had his base, and so it was the swing voters that made that happen.
And even Alison Grimes acknowledged that even the Democrats in the state don't like Obama, hence she didn't want to say whether she voted for him, but that was something that people made her look weak. So, but I don't think that's what actually turned the election.
I wanted to ask just a quick question on survey research at this point, because I don't know how reliable, Ken, you may know better than anybody, how reliable the polls were as we, you know, got closer to the election. I've understood that there's some, I don't know, questions about the reliability of them with the proliferation of cell phones and things like that.
Well, most of the reliable and reputable polling firms do reach out to cell phones. I mean, there's a myth out there that's saying that the cell phone people are not contacted. But I think the problem with it is that when you have a headline, as we saw in Kentucky a week or so before the election, that the Survey USA poll, which is a robo poll, had Grimes within, I think, a point of McConnell, and everybody was saying, "Wow, well, you know, this, you know, McConnell's in big trouble. The Democrats are going to bring back more money and things like that." You have to really check out the kind of polling, the mechanisms of the poll
as
they're being done. If you have a robo poll without speaking to a human being, it is so unreliable, and yet they still bring the headlines out there, and they're often misleading.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at polls, I always do look at it to see, you know,
the methodology,
and are they talking to people who are cell phone users who don't have landlines, who, you know.
And then how do they know where they live and, you know, all the other kinds of things that you know when you call a landline?
Well, I mean, they have the databases that can tell just about anything, you know.
And I believe this was an issue, too. I mean, even going back into the 30s when phones weren't as prevalent.
Exactly.
And
that's right.
So this is not really anything new.
No.
And I do know, I saw a poll that that people in Illinois, in Chicago, were so disheartened that a lot of them decided to only vote once.
Right.
You know, Howard, one of your the pundit you admire, Dr. Larry Sabato, was actually talking about this very issue, and he was being very critical of the way the polling went, and said really that there needs to be an investigation and a hard look at why so many polls were so far off. You think he's right that we need to look into this kind of thing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we have to look at the polls themselves, and we have to have a whole lot more discretion about which ones we take seriously.
Remember
and ones we do not. And I do have a lot of respect for Larry Sabato, not as much as I do for Ken. But Larry's right. Yeah.
Thank you for covering my tracks. We have to make Ken happy.
Right. Yeah. of course we do.
Ken, you wanted to add something there?
I was going to say, remember, there's a reputable Republican pollster who works for Eric Cantor, mm-hmm. who the day before the election, the House Majority Leader, the former House Majority Leader from Virginia, and his own poll said that Cantor was going to win by 26 points. And he got clobbered. And this was the day before the election. And this was his own pollster. Yeah. So, I mean, so there's so many.
With a real good reputation, too. Yeah.
Right. The questions you're asking about pollsters are absolutely on the mark, because we see polls and we say, oh, my goodness, that's the story right there. Right. But ultimately, these polls, as you said, the methodology could be wrong and so many things are misleading. And sometimes you see a poll. If I saw a poll, if I was a Democrat, for example, in a very close state, and suddenly I saw McConnell leads Grimes by 15 points, I may not show up. You know, I may not show up. Sometimes polls dictate who comes out to vote, and that's unfair.
Well, there's oversampling, there's undersampling, there's all kinds of
problems. And there are push polls.
And there are push polls. Right. But, you know, you got to be very careful about, and particularly as political journalists, about which ones you take seriously and which ones you don't.
Some people don't know what the margin of error means.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, as they say, Gene, the only poll that really matters is that final vote count. So.
Yeah, unless you're raising money before the election.
I don't think any poll showed 16 points.
No.
You were saying 11 was the most that they thought.
Even the McConnell camp said no poll showed that.
Scott, Governor Beshear has to be breathing just a sigh of relief since Democrats retain control of the Kentucky House, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's a really interesting dichotomy that happened there. Grimes got creamed in the state, but the state legislators, the Democrats, they held their own. Yeah. They didn't even lose any seats. It was they really stood strong on that. And I think it shows, I mean, I guess the Republicans couldn't tie the state lawmakers to Obama like they could with Grimes.
They could try.
Do you think there's any greater chance of the bridge being built now that we have a new Speaker of the House? No?
I've talked to a lot of people yesterday on that, and it would be very difficult for them to, because the pressure in Washington is to cut costs and not earmark money for these projects. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last we hear of the Brent Spence Bridge from McConnell in 6 years.
Ken, when you fly into town, you might want to take the ferry across the river instead of the I-75.
Well, I've already suggested that Neil Conan drive from Hawaii, so we'll see what happens.
Scott, Governor Beshear can't run again. The race for governor is next year. How is that shaping up?
Well, we have Jack Conway has already thrown his hat in the ring for the Democrats, and then Jamie Comer, the Ag Commissioner, is going to be seeking the Republican nomination along with former Louisville Councilman Hal Heiner. In Northern Kentucky, even Democrats and Republicans, they're excited about the Comer ticket because it features Northern Kentucky Senator Chris McDaniel, which is unusual that Northern Kentucky has a player in a statewide race. Hmm. It's a lot lower turnout in Northern Kentucky because you have more Cincinnati transplants there. So generally, they usually don't have any involvement in the constitutional races.
Do you think the fact that, I mean, Beshear is going to have a new lieutenant governor now?
Yes.
Crit Lewin Allen.
Correct.
Does she become a gubernatorial candidate?
Well, she said no today in the press conference.
Well, no today and no later.
I mean, it seems like the Democrats don't want anyone to challenge Conway, so I don't.
They want to clear the way for him.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I would be surprised if she does, but I mean, I was surprised with the results on Tuesday too. So. Yeah. I don't know.
Can I say something as an outsider here?
Sure.
It seems so remarkable to me that it seems almost impossible for Democrats to win a Senate seat in Kentucky. I think Wendell Ford was the last one. And yet, I guess since in the past, 40, 50 years, there's been Louis Nunn and Ernie Fletcher, only two Republican governors. The inability of Democrats to win a Senate seat is matched by the inability of Republicans to win a gubernatorial seat in Kentucky. That's fascinating to me.
It is really fascinating.
There's that dichotomy again.
Yes. They've kind of got, Kentucky's got one foot in the South and one foot in the North, and the politics reflects that.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
President Obama, Senator McConnell, they both say, we'll work together, and both men say they believe the public sent them a message that they should work together. What are some of the areas that you see where the president and the GOP will actually be able to do something together and get something accomplished?
Well, of course, they're talking about energy policy, and the president is under pressure from every side regarding the pipeline from Canada, and that's a big issue for the Republicans, more sources of energy. The Republicans still say, and John Boehner said this all throughout 2014, even though nothing ever happened, that the Republicans really believe that something has to be done about overhauling immigration. Now, a lot of the hardline Republicans keep saying border security, and they ran on that, including Scott Brown in New Hampshire. I mean, I guess all the illegals coming in from Vermont, they were afraid of. But I mean, the Republicans ran on that, but ultimately, every piece of language regarding immigration includes strong border security. So I get a sense that if anything could happen, again, you know, I've been wrong so many times, but those are two issues that certainly both sides could come to terms on.
Isn't it going to be the art of how to do something and have both sides take credit for it?
You know, Clinton was very good with that. Clinton didn't mind the triangulation and all that.
Right.
He didn't mind the Republicans taking credit for welfare reform or crime bills or things like that. It certainly helped Clinton's reelection in 1996, but it also helped Republican members of Congress say, I helped do this. So Clinton was a master at that. I don't get a sense that President Obama has those kind of political smarts.
No.
What do you think this election means for the Affordable Care Act, Ken?
Well, I mean, the Republicans ran against it. Even many Democrats said, I want to fix it. But that's another issue. I think both President Obama and McConnell could agree on not overhauling it clearly, but tinkering it if they have to. Now, a lot of Republicans hate when McConnell says, I want to iron out some of the problems, because many Republicans just want to, you know, get rid of it altogether. But there are some issues about taxes, about things like that I also think the two sides could iron out and improve the bill.
And you know, the District of Columbia, this was something I found interesting in the election. You had D.C. voting to legalize marijuana for personal use. You had Alaska and Oregon doing likewise. And I think Florida approved medical marijuana. So is legalization, I mean, we saw these issues during this election. Is legalization something we're going to see more and more of on the ballot in the future? It sure seems that way.
I think yes. I mean, you know, look. Once upon a time, not that long ago, the thought of same-sex marriage was just so unheard of. And if you think of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all the Democrats who opposed it in 2008, and now it's just, you know, common philosophy now for everybody or for most people. So moods do change, opinions do change, and marijuana on the ballot could be something we see more of. But I expect with Hillary Clinton running, the possibility of Elizabeth Warren running, although I think she doesn't, you can see more about minimum wage, more about income inequality on the ballots.
Ken, Gene, Howard, and Scott, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Political junkie Ken Rudin, Dr. Gene Beaupre, Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors Program, and Director for Government Relations, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson, and Scott Wortman, Kentucky politics and government reporter for The Inquirer. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Bruce Ellis. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Caney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.